Thank you very much. Really happy to be here with you today. And thank you, Yaakov, David, and everyone that came to my lecture today. So I will start, but I must say that this is work in progress. So I'm really looking for the discussion to hear more about your thought regarding my project. Since October 2023, Israel has found itself engaged in multiple regional conflicts, primarily in Gaza and Lebanon, while also facing threats from Iran, Iraq, and Yemen. The Houthi forces' attacks on Israel and their disruption of maritime traffic in the Red Sea demonstrate the conflict's expansion to include Ansar Allah, the Houthi movement, which controls significant portions of Yemen. Initially, these developments were met with dismissive attitude in Israel, underestimating the strategic significance of the Houthi threat. This perspective revealed a notable blind spot in recognizing the geopolitical realities that both Israel and Yemen are significant stakeholders in Red Sea maritime security. This pattern of geographical disconnections echoes Chaim Yaakovi's analysis of Israel's denied geographies regarding Africa. A similar form of spatial denial is evident in contemporary discourse that fails to recognize Israel's historical position within the Red Sea region. My paper today aims to reconstruct, as you can see on the map, the significant trilateral relationship between Yemen, East Africa, Horn of Africa, and Israel during the 60s and 70s, focusing on the Habsburg family's trading enterprise, which operated throughout the Red Sea region from 1880 to 1980, meaning around 100 years. Through examining these historical commercial networks, this study illuminates the deep interconnections that once characterized the Red Sea region, potentially offering insights for future regional cooperation and peace, inshallah. Israel's international strategy has historically extended beyond its Arab neighbors, notably through the periphery doctrine, a foreign policy framework developed by Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion, as, for example, Avi Schleim analyzed. While this doctrine is primarily known for its diplomatic and military dimensions, particularly in arms trade and covert cooperation with Turkey, Iran, Ethiopia, African countries, and the like, scholars like Etan Bar Yosef and Chaim Yaakovi have highlighted its broader cultural implications. The doctrine reflected and reinforced Israel's self-perception as a Western-aligned nation, manifesting its approach toward Africa through architectural project, Nahal, pioneer fighting youth programs, and other channels. This positioning effectively cast Israel in the role of a Western-oriented modernizing force in relation to post-colonial Africa. My paper examines the Red Sea region during this period through a different lens, focusing on the Habsburg family trading enterprise as a case study. This perspective yields several novel insights. First, the integration of the Red Sea Basin was significantly driven by local entrepreneurs native to the area, challenging traditional top-down narratives of regional development. Second, rather than the bilateral relationship between Israel and Africa emphasized in conventional accounts, this study reveals a triangular network connecting Yemen, East Africa, and Israel. Notably, these entrepreneurs' African connections served not to distance Israel from its Arab neighbors, as the periphery doctrine might suggest, but rather to facilitate connections between Israel and Arab countries through African intermediaries. Third, this economic network facilitated substantial cultural transfer to Israel, including cuisine, music, and traditional medicine through these trading relationships. This finding challenges the prevalent narrative of a complete rupture between Yemeni immigrants in Israel and their country of origin, demonstrating instead ongoing connections and cultural continuity through commercial networks. The Hibshush family's operations demonstrate how such networks operated not merely as economic entities, but as cultural mediators and unofficial diplomats. Finally, this analyze ultimately converges with a scholarly trajectory established by Etan Bar Yosef, Chaim Yaakobi, and Eli Podeh, while adding a crucial layer of complexity. While these merchant mediators establish genuine commercial and cultural connections, they made conscious decision to assist the Israeli state, actively allowing their commercial and social networks to be utilized for diplomatic leverage and intelligence gathering. This voluntary collaboration created a multiplicative effect while maintaining regional, commercial, and cultural connections. These merchants simultaneously and intentionally strengthened Israel's position vis-a-vis both Arab countries and African nations. I will now focus on the business of the Hibshush family from Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, which is the aim of my ISF project. In 1883, the father of the family, Sleiman Hibshush, initially an agent for the Menachem Mesa family from the city of Adan, founded an import-export Ba'al Mishtari company on his own. The company started in Sana'a and gradually spread to other cities in Yemen, especially to the port city of Adan. The story of the family is rooted in the events of its time, the opening of the Suez Canal, global economic developments, and colonial expansion contributed to the development of the Red Sea Basin, strengthening Yemen's ties to international trade along the coast of the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean. Sleiman's sons, Harun or Aharon, the oldest and most dominant of the sons, together with his brothers, Nissim, Tov, Menachem, and Said, all joined the firm. With the death of the father, Sleiman, in 1922, the family business became an organized company called Sleiman Hipshush Sons, and its activities expanded across the Middle East, the Red Sea, and the Indian Ocean. As with other family firms, members of the household were posted abroad to secure the company's commercial position in distant markets. The eldest child, Harun, remained mostly in Sana'a, but some of his brothers, such as Said, Tov, and Nissim, established branches of the company elsewhere. First, they established a branch in Aden, but towards the end of the 20s, Tov, Nissim, and their nephew Yehiel, a son of Harun, moved to Jaffa and established a branch there. And later, the branch moved to Tel Aviv. Chaim, another son of Harun, headed the branch in Aden, and the firm operated in Triangle between Sana'a, Aden, and Tel Aviv. So you can see here the heroes of this story, the father, Sleiman Hipshush, the son, Harun, and the grandson, Yechiel. Following the death of Harun Hipshush in 1943, the Sleiman Hipshush sons firm dissolved, and the sons of Harun founded a new company called Harun Hipshush Sons. So Chaim, Azar, and Yechiel established a separate company. The company operated until the beginnings of the 1950s, when each of the brothers went their separate ways. In the 1930s and 40s, family members continued extensive commercial activity on the shores of the Red Sea. The Hipshush family, like other merchant families, mainly exported agricultural goods from the central plateau of Yemen: coffee, butter, haides, rosewater, raisins, and imported spices from South Asia, and industrial products from Europe, either directly or indirectly. With the transformation from Yemen to Palestine and Israel, the family members chose to increase the purchase of grains and products of the Red Sea, such as sesame, fish from the Red Sea, such as wazif and sardine. Here you can see a picture of wazif, senna leaves, and more. The strongest and most significant commercial connection of the Hipshush family was with the Al-Bukhari company, an import-export company belonging to a Muslim family from Hudaydah, another port city of Yemen. This company, headed by Sleiman and later his son Hussein Al-Bukhari, was established in 1912 and was engaged in the transfer and sale of goods to large wholesalers in Yemen. The Jewish and Muslim merchants from Sana'a used to transport some of the goods for export through the port of Hudaydah and from there to the ports of the Red Sea through Al-Bukhari company. And as you can see here, this company, in one way or another, still continue to deal with these activities, and until today is the biggest or one of the biggest shipping company of Yemen in Hudaydah, meaning under the rule of the Houthi movement. When the Hibshus center of power was in Yemen, as you can see here, the map of Yemen and Sana'a in the middle, they bought the goods from farmer and small trader and transported them to Hodeidah or to Adan. Here, Adan, and the way from Adan to another places, or the way from Hodeidah to other places such as East Africa. So when the Hibshus center was in Yemen, they bought the goods from farmer and small trader from central Yemen to Hodeidah, and Al-Bukhari took care of transporting them to other parts of the world. With the Hibshus family gradually moving to Palestine, Al-Bukhari became the main intermediary for the Hibshus company. Al-Bukhari bought from various merchants in Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, and the like, and delivered the goods to Tel Aviv. For example, in a letter from 1946, Aboud Hussein Saklu al-Amoudi, a member of a wealthy and well-known merchant family from Jeddah, wrote that he delivered goods such as raisins and fish and more to Bnei Harun Hibshus in Tel Aviv at the behest of Al-Bukhari. In another letter, also from 46, from Sleiman Al-Bukhari himself to Yahya Yechiel Hibshus, Al-Bukhari wrote in a polite and friendly address to Hibshus, as you maybe can see here, he called him Al-Muhtaram, Mahbuna, meaning our loves, Akhwana, our brother, Yahya ibn Harun Hibshus, as you can see in here, if you can read the Arabic script. And last example, in a letter also from Sleiman al-Bukhari to the Hibshus brothers, the uncles of Yahya Hibshus, also in Tel Aviv, but another company, he requests that due to an arriving shipment of goods in Tel Aviv via Suez in October 46, payment should be transferred to the Bukhari family through Salem Sharabi, who was residing in Hodeidah. This business model would continue to serve the family for decades to come. It centered around collaboration of Hibshus firm with a main commercial firm typically located in major ports such as Hodeidah, in the example of Al-Bukhari, but other firms as well, who based in Hodeidah, Adan, Asmara, or Massawa. This intermediary firm would handle the logistics, establishing contact with supplier and arranging shipping to ensure goods reach the Hibshus family's base in Tel Aviv. Having traced the firm's evaluation through its first two generations, culminating in the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 and the family's migration from Yemen, this analysis now turns to the crucial third generation. Our story begins in the 60s, when members of the family of Hibshus family third generation began establishing their independent ventures. The focus of my talk will be particularly on the grandson Yechiel Hibshus, who I mentioned earlier. Here you can see his picture when he was maybe 80 or 85. So Yechiel Chibshush, his activity at this stage of the 60s was primarily conducted from Tel Aviv and operated on the old routes of the family between the African and Yemeni coast and the United States. His period of leadership offered a unique window into how established trading networks adapted to and helped shape the new political realities of the post-colonial Red Sea region. I based this description and the following documents mainly on the Yechiel Chibshush archive that is held at the National Library of Israel. This archive contains a lot of documents concerning the family's business activities. The collection is over 5 meters long, and it includes many certificates, mainly in Judeo-Arabic and Hebrew, but also in English and Arabic and French and other languages. In addition, I will use the writings of Yechiel Chibshush himself, who draw on a variety of sources, published and unpublished, as well as interviews, personal knowledge, and oral traditions, as you can see, for example, from his 2 volumes about the history of his family, Mishpachat Chibshush, the story of Chibshush family. The collection contains mostly thousands of letters, family letters, exchanges between business partners, overseas agents and other merchants, as well as letters concerning community affairs. People reported on their business experiences, as well as the economic and political situation, and their plans to future meetings with family and friends. As we know, letters are a unique and important historical source. To preserve the ties between the various branches of the Chibshush family dwelling on the shores of the Red Sea, letters were often sent day after day, week after week, to family and friends in Yemen, Palestine, Egypt, Ethiopia, and elsewhere. As I discovered, these letters created a profound sense of togetherness among those living hundreds of kilometers apart. Business and official letters between business partners also revealed, directly or indirectly, the deep, intimate ties between the correspondents. A thorough investigation of these exchanges shed light on the family business networks and revealed the complex and intimate human relationships between the members of this social milieu. Intimate relationships were significant for the creation of trust in business, which appears as an important tool in designing long-distance trade networks, as Avner Greif, Trivelato, Aslanian, and Joseph Sassoon, to mention just some names, teach us. The letters examined so far show very strong personal ties between the family members and even among the representatives of the various branches of the firm. In some cases, the correspondence with other merchants show a long-standing relationship, living and interacting with people from different backgrounds provides an opportunity to explore the daily life and social encounters of these diverse communities. As note, a good example is the extensive connection that the Chibshush firm had with the Al-Bukhari family. The connections with the Al-Bukhari family were intense and long-standing, and it offers an alternative view of the relationship between Jews and Muslims in Yemen and elsewhere. A perusal of the family letters reveals that there were fraternal and affectionate relations between Jews and Muslims that went beyond business and commercial ties. In the early 60s, after several years of conducting business within Israel, Yahya Chibshush decided to reconnect with his old associates, the merchants of the Red Sea trading firms. He first reached out to his Jewish contact in Aden, which remained under British control until 67. Here you can see one of the maps that I found in the British Library, and you can see in the north the Imamic, the part of Yemen that under the rule of the Imam from Hamid ad-Din dynasty, and the South Yemen that under the control of the British Empire until 67. And here you can see Aden, the capital of the protectorate and the big and important port city. Through merchants like Menachem Mesa family and other Jewish family in Aden, Yechiel Chibshush was able to source goods from both Aden and Imamic Yemen, for example, from Sana'a, for import to Israel. However, these initial efforts yielded limited success, hampered by the growing anti-colonial unrest in Aden, the civil war in North Yemen, and rising regional tensions. 1967 marked a turning point in Yahiel business operations. With his family's migration to the United States, he began dividing his time between New York and Tel Aviv. This period coincided with the end of the British control, colonial rule in Aden, and the exodus of its Jewish community. Having lost his direct connections to Yemen, Yechiel Chibshush turned to establish Yemeni Muslim merchants based in the Horn of Africa, east of Africa, particularly in Ethiopia and what was then its province of Eritrea. These merchants were part of an old Yemeni diaspora that had spread throughout the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean for many years. Many of the most influential among them originated from Hadramaut in eastern Yemen. As you can see here, this is the area of Hadramaut. I can mention some of the most important people who came original from Hadramaut. For example, our friend Osama bin Laden, his father came from Hadramaut to Saudi Arabia, and more people in Indonesia, Kenya, Ethiopia, and other places around the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean. But other immigrants from central Yemen also immigrated to East Africa in the 19th and 20th century. Yechiel devised a sophisticated business strategy. He would use Muslim merchants on the African coast at intermediaries to maintain contact with his former Yemeni commercial partners who still live in Yemen. This created a triangular trade network connecting Yemen, Africa, and Israel. While officially conducting business with merchants based in Ethiopia, Yahiel effectively used these connections in Africa as a conduit for messages and transaction that flowed from Yemen through Africa to Israel. His renewed partnership with a long-standing Hudaydah firm was among the most significant developments. On June 17, 1968, Yahiel wrote a letter to his longtime Muslim friend from Yemen after a break of years. And I do not mention the name of the Yemeni merchant. So you can see, if you can follow the Arabic language, and I will read some sentences from my free translation of the original Arabic letter. So, Yahiel Hibshush, as you can see here, Yahya Harun Hibshush Tel Aviv, Share, Nahalat Binyamin, okay, meaning Nahalat Binyamin Street, Tel Aviv. He wrote in, as you can see, 1968 in June. He wrote to, 17, he wrote to his friend, Al-Muhtarem, Al-Sheikh, so and so. And he wrote after that, after the peace and the question about their health, we are informing you that we, meaning I, went to America. And from there, we wrote to you through a friend, Ali Muhammad al-Damari, a friend that lived in Ethiopia. And his friend al-Damari wrote to the friend in Hudaydah and sent him a letter. But no reply came from you. Maybe what caused this was good news and health. Maybe. And the reason for this is that we are thinking of renewing with you of orders for some goods, coffee and gish and sesame and honeycomb and wax and especially the wazif, which at the time you used to send us from Hudaydah. And in the end of the letter, he wrote, and I would like you to reply if your Excellency is going to be in Asmara. It is possible that we will go there. So meaning that if we can't meet in Yemen or in Israel, we can meet in the middle of the way, in Africa, in Eritrea, in Asmara, the capital of Eritrea. And we will meet and to talk with you about the work and the mutual understanding between you and us. And to all the members of your household, peace be upon you from your friend, and peace be upon you and God's mercy. End quote. Indeed, trade relations between the parties were renewed. And in the following years, the merchant from Hudaydah sent goods to Israel via the Ethiopian coast. For example, you can see here a letter from his friend in Hudaydah that was sent via Africa to Tel Aviv. And what is very interesting to see is that he called him here Yahya Abdallah. And when I met one of the sons of Yahiel Hibshus that still live in Brooklyn in New York, he told me when he was young, his father decided to write on the gate of the house not the name Hibshus, but the last name Abdallah. And he didn't understand that, but after I show him the letters, he understood that this is this was the way of Yechiel Chibshus to be in contact with his friend in Hudaydah, because if his friend will write a letter from Yemen with the name Chibshus, everyone will understand that the meaning is that he is in contact with someone from Israel. So the nickname of Yechiel Chibshus was Yehye Abdallah in that times. As mentioned, because direct communication between Israel and Yemen was impossible, Yechiel officially traded with his friends who lived in Ethiopia, Massawa, Asmara, and Addis Abeba. But in many cases, the goods originated in Yemen and merely passed through Africa to Israel. The renewal and successful maintenance of these ties during the decade 67 to 75, until the political changes in Ethiopia, supported my two flawed arguments. First, that there exists a unity between different regions of the area C. And second, that this solidarity and unity stems not only from shared economic interest, but more significantly, from the long-standing bonds within the Yemeni community, regardless of whether its members settled in Yemen, Ethiopia, or in Israel. See, for example, the correspondence between Ali El-Nahari, and I took the picture from Jonathan Miran's article, and some documents from Chibshus, from Chibshus archive in the National Archive of Israel, and you can see the correspondence between Ali El-Nahari, who lived in Massawa in the African coast, and Yechiel Chibshus. The shared Arabic language and community ties has sustained these connections for decades. Take, for example, the Ba Mushmus family and their ties with Chibshus, based on the work of Jonathan Miran and Massimo Zakaria, the family's history can be traced. Hussein Abdallah or Abdullah, born in 1876 in Hadramaut, East Yemen, arrived in Massawa, in African coast, as a boy in 1889, and he worked with his father, Abdullah Hassan, until 1896. In subsequent years, he traveled frequently between Ethiopia and Yemen, raising his 10 children in the Yemenite Arab tradition. In 1925, he and his sons established a hardware store in Asmara, and I think this shop, in the name of Ba Mashmus, that the picture was taken from Google Map, is the same place of the hardware store in the beginning of the 20th century. So he traveled between Yemen and Ethiopia, raised his sons, and, as I said, opened a hardware store in Asmara. The family became not only an important economic presence in Asmara, but also emerged as leaders of the Yemeni diaspora, establishing a school, wakf institutions, and a mosque, among other community institutions. My research has uncovered previously unknown information about one of the younger sons, Saleh Ba Mashmus, or Mushmus, who maintained a long-term business partnership with Yehiel Yechiel Chibshus and facilitated connections along with other merchants to the commercial firm based in Hudaydah in Yemen. Although Yehiel and Saleh lived for decades, about 50 years abroad, outside of Yemen, their geographical and cultural proximity and shared Arabic language provided a sufficient common denominator to maintain extensive trade relations. These connections allowed Yehiel to import various products from the Red Sea region, coffee and the like. Thus, Chibshus served as a crucial cultural intermediary enabling the preservation of Yemeni heritage among Yemeni immigrants in Israel. It's worth noting that even today, Yemeni products remains readily available in Yemeni neighborhoods such as Rosh Ha'ayin, Rehovot, and Tel Aviv markets and elsewhere, Yemeni coffee, Arabic gum, and koh, and even gish. And I just found on Twitter someone post a cold gisher and wrote El Gisher Bared Aumashi, meaning or you drink this cold gisher or not drink at all. A considerable portion of these goods continues to be imported from the Red Sea region and Ethiopia until today in Israel. And I think Chibshus and other Yemenite firms had a big impact on this market. As we approach the concluding section of today's lecture, I would like to present a critical analysis of Yehiel Chibshus' activities, which reveals how his extensive trade networks in the Red Sea region served multiple strategy purposes. His commercial connections facilitated even intelligence gathering, strengthened diplomatic ties, and supported Jewish immigration from Yemen to Israel. These information networks not only fostered friendly relations, as I have shown earlier, but a significantly enhanced Israel's strategic position in the Red Sea Basin in these times. This final analysis will examine Chibshus' operation in Aden during 1964 to 1965, particularly focusing on his relationships with Jewish merchants and key figures in the Yemeni anti-colonial undergrounds. These relationships proved instrumental in establishing crucial connections with Israel. Thank you very much. The 1960s marked a period of profound political transformation in Yemen. In North Yemen, the Imamat, the Zaydi Shia monarchy, ruled until 62 under the Hamid ad-Din dynasty. But when Muhammad al-Badr, the new Imam, Muhammad al-Badr, ascended to power, the country plunged into civil war. This conflict pitted Yemeni Republican forces, predominantly Sunni officers, officer backed by Egypt against monarchist supported who received aid from Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and to some extent Britain. Meanwhile, South Yemen remained under British control, particularly the strategic port city of Aden and its surrounding protectorates. The early 60s witnessed an escalation of anti-colonial resistance, manifesting in two major opposition movements. The Front for the Liberation of Occupied South Yemen, led by Abdullah al-Asnaj, and I will elaborate on him later, and its later rival, the National Front, Al-Jabhat al-Qawmiya lil-Tahrir, under Qahtan al-Sha'bi. Egypt, under Gamal Abdel Nasser leadership, played a pivotal role in fomenting resistance against both British imperial control in South Yemen and the monarchical regime in North Yemen. Nasser's Egypt served as an educational and ideological center for numerous Yemeni opposition activities, providing them with both guidance and financial support. Given Israeli strategic opposition to Nasser, to Gamal Abdel Nasser, whom they considered a sworn enemy, Israeli policy aligned with counter-revolutionary forces in Yemen, supporting both the monarchist in the north of Yemen, and moderate political factions in Aden, a position that paralleled British interest. The situation in North Yemen has been thoroughly documented by scholars, notably Clive Jones, maybe you read his book, whose research reveals how both British and Israeli forces provided military support to the monarchist forces. During this period, the Israeli Air Force conducted numerous operations and dozens of flights delivered weapons to monarchist rebels in Yemen, northern mountain regions. As you can see here, the Imam, the king of Yemen, al-Badr, and his soldier in the northern mountains of Yemen. My research breaks new ground by revealing Israelis' previously undocumented involvement in South Yemen. Through Jewish merchants, as I will show immediately, Israel pursued a multifaceted strategy in Aden. Firstly, they worked to cultivate relationships with moderate local activities. Secondly, these merchants served as intermediaries to establish connections with both political leaders in Aden and elements of the Yemeni monarchy. Additionally, they reached out to influential figures from Djibouti, Somalia, Ethiopia, and Asmara who had settled in Aden. The overarching objective was to strengthen pro-Israeli sentiment while countering Egyptian influence in the area. Through Hibshush alliance with Bentov Mesa, a prominent Jewish merchant leader in Aden and active Zionist with established connection to Israel, Yechiel Hibshush worked to influence the political dynamics between Aden and North Yemen. Moshe Meshumar Mesa, known as Bent of Mesa, was born in Aden in 1902 into Aden's wealthy Menachem Mesa merchant family. He studied at the American University in Beirut and later visited Sana'a and met members of the Hibshush family. From 1937 to 67, he served as the head of the Jewish community in Aden. During this time, Bentov lived in Aden and outside the city, spending periods in London, New York, and Tel Aviv. However, his business interest in Aden continued to be managed through his employees, even when he was based elsewhere. Bentov forged close trade ties with Yehiel Hibshush during this period of the 60s. So, the strategic objective of Hibshush and Bentov was to cultivate pro-Israeli sentiment among select figures, political figures in Aden. Documentation in the Israeli Foreign Ministry archives reveals extensive correspondence on these activities, including exchanges between Hibshush and Bentov, who employed the code name Ben Moshe. Bentov's letters, composed in elegant Hebrew with biblical verses and Jewish traditional references, utilized pseudonyms when discussing political activities in Aden, Djibouti, Somalia, and Egypt. Among the key political figures that Hibshush and Bentov sought to cultivate was Abdullah Lasnaj, which I mentioned earlier, and Bentov, in the letters, called him deaf. Because this is the meaning, he called him deaf, because this is the meaning of the name Asnaj in Yemen, the Yemeni dialect of Arabic. With support from the Israeli Foreign Ministry and the Mossad, of course, the two Jewish merchants actively worked to establish closer ties with Al-Asnaj, recognizing his significant political influence in Aden. As mentioned, Abdullah Al-Asnaj was the leader of the Aden Trades Union Congress, Mu'tamar al-Ulami, and later the Front of the Liberation of Occupied South Yemen, Jabhat Tahrir Janub al-Yaman al-Muhtali. He supported political means to accomplish Britain and union with North Yemen. Its unwillingness to use political violence resulted in a loss of influence to the National Front, his enemy. And if we have time on the discussion, I can find a YouTube film that he mentioned, his memories from the 60s. Anyway, initial secret contacts of Bentov and Hibshush were established with North Yemeni immigrants in Aden who maintained loyalist sympathies, particularly Sheikh Ali al-Wajia and Mr. Ahmad Mansour. Here you can see, for example, from the Kew Gardens, the National Archives in London, a translation of the British Empire to one of the booklet of the movement, the labor movement of Asnaj. So Hibshush and Bentov conducted a good connection with two immigrants from North Yemen in Aden, Sheikh Ali Al-Wajia and Mr. Ahmad Mansour. The relationship with Hibshush was accepted by Al-Wajia and in part due to his memories of the Hibshush family from Sana'a and even his visits to the Hibshush home in Gaal Yahud, the neighborhood of the Jews in Sana'a. The later, Ahmed Mansour held a significant position in the Aden Trade Union and crucially was a close associate of Abdullah al-Asnaj. In one of his letters, Bentov describes al-Asnaj's strained relationship with one leader, Harodan, the dictator, referring to Gamal Abdel Nasser. According to Bentov, who employs a play on words in Aramaic, al-Asnaj opposed Nasser's method of violence, expressing this through the first called the Alim Gvar, whoever is stronger prevails. A strategic opportunity arose when Egypt expelled 50 Yemenite students from its education institution, even demanding the educational cost from their parents. Hibshush and Bentov leveraged this situation by proposing an alternative. They offered to arrange for select Yemenite students to study in Israel with funding provided through professional training programs sponsored by the Israeli Foreign Ministry, Mashav Department. This initiative proved successful on multiple fronts. The students' parents accepted the proposal, as you can see, for example, from the letter of Mansour to Hibshush, and 4 students were selected, and notably, Mansour succeeded even in persuading al-Asnaj to seriously consider this Israeli overture, but with the understanding that it required absolute secrecy given its sensitive nature, as you can see here in this letter from Bentov to Hibshush. Bentov also took advantage of al-Asnaj's wedding with a daughter of local millionaire in Aden, Hassan, the son of Ismail Khodabakhsh Khan, as you can hear the name, he original from India. And al-Asnaj's wedding sparked complaint about his connections with a millionaire and his distance from the position of the Socialist Party, Hizb al-Sha'ab al-Ishtiraki, which he had founded. So how a socialist became a son of law of a millionaire? To get closer to al-Asnaj, Bentov made sure to sell goods cheaply to the new wife and try to invite them to dinner at his home. While this initial attempt did not lead to a formal rapprochement between Israel and al-Asnaj, a connection persisted, suggesting the potential for alternative historical path of cooperation between Israel and Yemen through trading networks. This possibility is illustrated in a letter written by Bentov to Abdullah al-Asnaj 10 years later. A letter written by Bentov to Abdullah al-Asnaj in 1975 during a period of intense regional conflict. By then, Al-Asnaj had relocated from South Yemen to North Yemen, where he had become a prominent politician in the Yemeni Republican state. Bentov, who was dividing his time between London and Tel Aviv in his later years, reached out to his former associate and wrote to him. Hopefully you can see. And he wrote him, hopefully I can see. And it gave me, so you can see from a Bentov Mesa in London to Dr. Abdullah Al-Asnaj in Sana'a. And dear Dr. Abdullah, it gives me great pleasure to hear of your new appointment, Minister for Foreign Affairs. And I jump here. Recently, I have observed in the Jewish Chronicle, a famous newspaper in London, that according to report in the daily newspaper Le Monde, that Yemen invited Yemenite Jews to come back, to return to Yemen. Really, really, I feel inspired by such statement as, after all, we, Arabs and Jews, are both of the Semitic race, akin in religion and of similar language. And he suggests to arrange a mission of doctors and other Jewish people to return, as he said in the end, to return to Yemen, their country of origin. In conclusion, examining the triangle of relations between Israel, East Africa, and Yemen through the lens of local trading networks reveals a fascinating historical narrative. The story of the Hibshus trading firm illuminates the interconnected nature of the Red Sea region, demonstrating how Jewish and Muslim merchants collaborated across political and religious boundaries. These trading networks did more than facilitate commerce. They served as bridges between nations and communities. Key figures like Yehiel Hibshush, Al-Bukhari, Ba'a Mushmus, Ali Al-Nahari, and Bentov Mesa acted as pioneering entrepreneurs whose business activities fostered positive international relations that benefited the entire region. However, these commercial connections were intricately linked with political and military considerations, serving as valuable channels for Israel's diplomatic efforts in the Red Sea Basin. This research has uncovered previously unknown aspects of Israel's involvement in South Yemen during the final years of British rule, revealing how Israeli merchants and Yemeni Jews leveraged their commercial relationships in attempt to establish diplomatic ties with political figures in Yemen, Somalia, and beyond. The story of these trading networks challenged conventional narratives by highlighting patterns of cooperation, then conflict, showing how local business relationship could transcend political divisions and potentially create alternative path for regional diplomacy. Thank you very much.